So Jay Diamond is a very good friend of ours, of Montgomery County Skeptics. He is coming from the board of the Bay Area Skeptics, which is up in the San Jose, San Francisco, the Lomar area. They have meetings once a month. Jay is this is his third lecture and our fourth. And so he's lectured in all three. I mean, three of the four, but he's attended all four of our camps. So Jay is going to be talking to us about madness in marketing, and you will also find two of his other lectures on our YouTube channel. So
let me just hit stop.
Or did
go.
Kyle suggest that we solve the singularity issue by killing all undergraduates? Welcome, everyone. So this is a talk about persuasion. So the title of my talk is a reference to the television show Mad Men, which in turn is a reference to the advertising men of Madison Avenue in the 1950s and 60s. While it's a great show, it tends to infer that advertising specifically and marketing in general is done by drunk people delivering to drunk customers by pulling things out of their asses at the very last moment. And while that's sometimes a good strategy, especially if your customers and your competition is also drunk, it kind of sidesteps the issue that marketing and good marketing is actually a lot of hard work to try and accomplish its goals. And those goals are actually pretty, those goals are actually pretty important. The goals are really to influence people and to persuade them to do something with your product or service. So this talk is about why skeptics need to understand and embrace why it's important to persuade people. So many of you are going to hear some of the things I say here, and you're going to think that they're very simplistic and ridiculous on their face. But I assure you that the three myths that I'm going to talk about all came from skeptics perpetrating those myths. So these are real things that I've had to combat. So let me give you a little background to get started. So I have two graduate degrees, one in business and one in engineering. And so I'm hated by two groups. So to give you an idea, I've run $100 million marketing programs, and I've built silicon chips and do the kind of stuff that Kyle was just talking about, neural networks. And so I've kind of been on both sides of the fence. And when I'm on the engineering side, I have the marketing guy saying, well, you know, he's just a propeller kid. He doesn't understand anything about business and persuading people. And when I'm on the other side, I get the same thing. He's just a marketing idiot, right? So I'm not realizing that I actually have experience in both of these things. Now, when I talk to skeptics, and I get a lot of pushback on marketing and persuasion, I realize I'm actually hated by three groups. And I'll interrupt you now before you go forward. Let's just say that it's at least three groups, and I leave that as an exercise to the audience to completely fill that in. Alright. So I'm going to, let me give you a little quote here. So this is one of my favorite quotes on marketing and technology. So great devices are invented in the laboratory, great products are invented in the marketing department. This is a quote by David Allen, who was the first marketing vice president at Intel, a company I spent a lot of time at. The idea here is that having the best technology is part of the answer. In the same context, in the skeptical movement, having the best process for critical thinking is only part of the solution for improving our society. So let me jump into these myths. first one, marketing doesn't affect me. Also known as, I'm way too smart to fall for this crap. Okay, well, skeptics generally agree that all humans are susceptible to cognitive tricks. So, a good example is optical illusions. And these are old, famous optical illusions, where even when you know you're looking at the multiple images there, your brain can't help but flip between those two. Another cognitive trick is misdirection in magic, where we all fall for that. Or logical fallacies. I mean, skeptics are very, very accustomed to talking about these. Now, humans, by their very evolutionary nature, take shortcuts that can be exploited for various reasons. Let me give you a simple marketing example, and this is around the concept of branding. Several years ago, I went out to my supermarket to buy cornflakes. And this is actually when I was doing my business degree, so I was very cognizant of this issue of branding. And I walked down the aisle, and I see my Kellogg's cornflakes that I've been eating since I was a little boy. And right next to that are generic cornflakes. Now, the generic cornflakes were half the price of the brand new cornflakes. And I looked at the boxes, and I looked at the nutritional value of both of them and all the rest, and I said, you know what? I'm not a sucker. I'm just going to buy the generic ones and save myself half the money. So I took them home, and by every measure I could come up with, the generic cornflakes were at least as good as the Kellogg's cornflakes. They had at least the same nutritional value. Every flake was identical, something you don't see with Kellogg's cornflakes, where they're all different sizes and shapes. In many ways, the generic cornflakes were better. And I hated them. Hated them because they didn't taste like my childhood. They didn't taste like my expectations. And so Kellogg's has spent decades imbuing all kinds of value onto that brand. And so every time I enter the supermarket, I have to consciously override my logical impulses to side with my subjective preferences. And you do it too. You know, a good example is buying Coke, where you're actually paying more for sugar water than you would for the equivalent volume of jet fuel. It's insane, right? Virtually every brand you recognize in the supermarket is because they've built a shorthand called a brand and put equity into that brand so that you recognize it and associate things with it. Branding is a very powerful aspect of marketing. Is that wrong? No. That's human. So, if you will follow my logic on this. Skeptics often deny that they are susceptible to marketing. Humans are susceptible to marketing. Most skeptics are humans. Ergo, I think some of you may be psychic. I think you've anticipated this. Most skeptics are susceptible to marketing. Now, I am 100% positive that there are a few of you out there that are saying, that's great, but I'm too smart for that firm. And to those people, I will say, you're delusional. Marketing myth number two. Marketing is like, by the way, I started out with about 10 myths. And I don't know if you remember my title, it was three myths plus a rant about why skeptics need to pay attention to persuasion. I realized after a while that if I'm going to do a rant, I can't possibly do 10. So then it became five myths, and then it became four myths. So, myth number two, marketing is lying. AKA, if you just tell the truth, you win. Well, first off, there are many examples of superior products losing in the marketplace to inferior products just because, even though they told the truth, they did not win in the marketplace. So that's very easy to disprove. But this whole concept of marketing as a lie is a more complex one than that. So marketing is integrated storytelling to persuade your intended audience to use a product or service. And that goes across all kinds of different aspects of storytelling, including product definition, positioning, pricing, placement, promotion. Good storytelling is simply representing something in a way that is palatable to the intended audience. So let's talk specifically about advertising, because this is most of the pushback I get from skeptics. And that is that this idea of advertising puffery is lying. Now, advertising is a very specific form of marketing, and puffery is an industry term used in advertising. And puffery is this subjective boasting with vague claims. So if you take a look at the ads down here, no one is going to sue Starbucks because the cup of coffee didn't make them the best fan. If you look at the Aquafresh claims, they're very vague, they're very aspirational. The intent here is not to deceive. The intent is to give you a good association with the product or service. In the parlance of skeptics, these are not testable claims. Now, let me juxtapose that with false advertising, something that is illegal. Now, in these cases, they make a very specific testable claim, but they don't have the evidence to back it up. And there can be all kinds of grounds for those claims that include things like what's in the product, did we survey people and what did they say? There's all kinds of things that go into that. But as some examples, when Airborne says that they ward off colds and they cannot prove it, they're slapped with a lawsuit and they pay $23 million. When Extends tries to sell their boner pills and says that it will give you a bigger erection, they go down with a $6 million lawsuit, pun intended. An example that many skeptics are familiar with are these guys, Power Balance. And so these guys made a tremendous amount of money with claims like up to a 500% increase in strength, power, and flexibility. They made so much money that they could put their name on an arena in Sacramento. That is a lot of money. But in 2011, they were slapped with a $57 million lawsuit, had to admit that there was no credible scientific evidence, and had to offer a refund. So they went bankrupt. And by the way, they were slapped with lawsuits around the world. So the laws around false advertising and false claims are different around the world. And these guys broke the law. So there's a massive difference between puffery, advertising puffery, and false advertising that is often lost. Marketing is lying, like toupees are obvious. If it's an obvious toupee, you know it's a toupee. If it's a good toupee, you probably didn't notice that it was a toupee at all, and you just didn't pay any attention to it. The myth is a bit of a straw man. A bad toupee or obvious is not generalizable to all toupees. Just as illegal marketing is illegal, and bad marketing is bad marketing, it doesn't mean that all marketing is either illegal or bad, and it doesn't mean that marketing is lying. Myth number three. Anyone can do marketing. Now, I struggle with this one because technically it is, in fact, true. Just like anyone can do art. But finger painting is not the same thing as a red wine. Anyone can do science. But pointing at a shiny light is not the same thing as finding exoplanets. Anyone can do engineering. But sticking your finger in a socket is not the same thing as designing a microprocessor. Now, there was a period in time when an engineer was someone who spent his career in a plant, learned everything about the plant, and eventually they would call me engineer. And at some point somebody said, well, let's take that information and try and compress that down so someone can kind of get a head start and get going a little faster. And they don't have to spend 50 years before we can call them an engineer and actually have them do useful work. So on the same note, anyone can do marketing, but don't tell me that putting up a lemonade stand is the same thing as doing a worldwide integrated marketing campaign. So, as an example, an integrated marketing campaign involves many, many moving parts. Everything from branding and advertising in print, broadcast, outdoor, online, live, guerrilla advertising, co-marketing with partners, retail integration and activation, geographical, cultural, and language customization. And any of those disciplines can be an area of expertise on its own. So as an example, if I talk about digital marketing, that involves things like audience research, building and testing effective content, creative, ad placement and asset management, search engine optimization, and setting keywords and targeting, affiliate marketing, mobile marketing. I can go on and on and on. So there's a lot of value in having expertise in marketing. But that said, sure, anyone can do it. They just can't do it well. So why should skeptics care? AKA, now I get to my rant. Which is really, you know, the main reason I'm doing this in the first place. So today, the situation we're in is most skeptics who are pushing back on marketing are going to a gunfight with a knife. And that's not pretty. And one of the reasons for that is, and it might sound both obvious and self-referential, but persuasion is persuasive. Now, pseudoscience, medical quackery, con men, they love marketing. And they love it because they understand that persuasion is key to pushing their worldview and or perpetrating their stance. Now, just because they use it doesn't mean that skeptics should not. It's a tool, just like science, logic, and critical thinking skills. So, why should skeptics embrace persuasion? Well, because it works. And opponents of science and reason already embrace it because they know it works. And because I want science and evidence to win. And you should too. And I think you probably already do, otherwise you probably wouldn't be here today. So, this should be easy, right? The easiest product to market is a good product. And skepticism is a great product. Oops, I just did something. There we go. And skeptics love to understand cognitive shortcuts. And marketing is the ultimate cognitive shortcut. So, skeptics should love marketing, right? But I keep getting pushback from skeptics on marketing. So, I thought it would be worthwhile talking about some things that we as a skeptical movement should seriously think about doing in relation to marketing. So I'm going to talk about these four things briefly. So the first is public relations. My message to skeptics is, don't be this guy. I've had skeptics tell me that they don't need press training because they know their subject and they can just win. Like anything, training and preparation makes a massive difference. If you are going to be participating in public relations, prepare talking points. Be concise and clear. Practice. Now, I know that sounds obvious, but many people don't do this. Not everyone should be a spokesperson. If you are doing a skeptical activist event, assign one person, two people, tops to do this. And if you're going to be a spokesperson, get press training. It makes a huge difference. The next one is branding. Skepticism is a big branding problem. It's often used as a synonym for cynicism, denialism, and contrarianism. And you've all seen this in the press many times, where they talk about climate skeptics or GMO skeptics, and they are not using the word in the way that we use that word. And the problem here is the skeptical movement really hasn't cultivated the brand. And the result is brand confusion. As an example, the Center for Inquiry loves to use this tagline, "I doubt it," which is something that Alex Jones from InfoWars could also claim. He doubts a lot of things. But again, he's not using that the way we use it. So a lot of skeptical organizations have stopped leading with the word skepticism because of all of these meanings. So the group that I founded, Reason for Reason, again, uses the word reason twice and skepticism no times for that very reason. And then, as people come in, we explain to them what scientific skepticism is. But we don't lead with it. Again, it's a branding problem. Packaging. So, presentation can radically change adoption. Can we repackage skepticism for mass adoption? Well, I'm going to give you a very specific, very adjacent example of how this can be done. And the example is, how can we encourage girls in STEM? Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So, in 2012, a Stanford-educated mechanical engineer named Debbie Sterling decided to try to solve this problem. So, she went into a toy store and came across this. The pink eye. It was mostly dolls, some games, and a number of books. When she went over to the boys' aisle, the blue aisle.
The recorder. Pink eye.
I wonder if the indigenous group in Brazil that was mentioned a little earlier might be not susceptible to marketing as much as we're at all.
So first off, so the question was about the Brazilian tribe. So first off, you know, Kyle showed that, and all I could think, and you know, his point about that was if they came to you and said, you know, we're if the native said to you, you are our God, we will worship you, you know, he said, I don't want to be worshipped. All I could think of was, those people look delicious. It turns out humans are susceptible to this stuff around the world in every culture. In many cases, there are social variants, and I'm sure there would be some social variants with those people. They haven't been subjected to the same social pressures that we have. But they've been subjected to the same evolutionary pressures. And that means they follow the same shortcuts that we do. And marketing case management is. That's
all we need is a TV.
the comment was all they need is a TV.
What's the biggest turnoff when you're marketing to a group of people?
The biggest turnoff, can you be more specific?
As in, when you're marketing a product, what makes people not want to buy it versus the same product being marketed in a different way that makes people want to buy it?
Right. So a lot of it has to do with an earlier speaker. He was talking about testimony in court, where people love a good story. People get engaged with a good story. One of the problems we have as skeptics is we love to confront issues with facts, when in fact, very often, anecdotes will be more easily digested. So if you go to a website called, what's the website I'm thinking of? It's Tim Farley's website.
What's
the harm? What's the harm?
.net.
It's all anecdotes, right? So the biggest detractor from getting marketing across is when people can't engage, can't relate to the story you're trying to tell, when they don't think it applies to them.
Do you think best coffee in the world is an untestable claim?
I don't know. You should sue them if you think it's... making that claim.
They certainly haven't tested it, but that's not sufficient. I'm asking you, if somebody comes to the IIG and says, I can make the best coffee in the world, can we accept that claim as a testable claim?
My answer very clearly is no, you have to be more specific. Best by what metric? Best meaning most people believe that it is the best. Well, that's a testament. Best by it has the best flavor profile based on this chemical interaction. That's a testable claim. So I think on its own, that's too amorphous of a claim to test.
Yeah, that's what's wrong with it.
Jay, if you're done there?
Yeah.
First of all, love the presentation, a lot of energy, wonderful. Second, unfortunately, you are like very accurate with like middle-aged white guys. just looking over here. And, all right. For the most part, not everyone, for the most part, mainly. I still recall. I think it was a 60 Minutes piece on this publicist who was like a legend. Bald-headed guy in New York named Jerry Delafamina. He had some firm called Delafamina Trevisiano. And I still remember them asking him, what does he do? And he said, I'm a liar for hire. And he was like one of the biggest publicists going. And it seems kind of contrary to the whole skeptic movement that you're going to embrace lying as a way of promoting truth. So that kind of, I don't know, I'm not too good with that.
I don't know if you saw my second myth, which was marketing is not lying. Lying is lying.
You're right. The other thing I was thinking, you know, maybe like you said with the name, I think like Seabass became super popular or before. It was something like the Patagonian toothfish or something. No one would touch it. So skepticism has like this, you know, kind of like negative, doubtful air. Could you like call it certainism? And you know, so I hope a winning result.
So okay, no, very often companies are saddled with brands for legacy reasons that they can't just ditch. And I think skepticism is the same way, but that doesn't mean that you lead with that. So much in the same way that a number of skeptic groups, you know, don't have the word skepticism or skeptic in their name,
right.
You don't have to lead with it. And eventually, when you get to the point where you can have a more nuanced discussion, people understand what scientific skepticism is, because you can explain it. The problem is, in the 2 seconds, well, I've had tons of climate change deniers, for example, say, hey, I'm just a skeptic. Well, they were using that word the same way I am, right? And so being able to have that nuanced discussion is something that takes longer than 5 seconds. So we need to get there. But in the meantime, I think very often we need to lead with something that is more palatable for people and more easily comprehensible for people.
More marketable.
Okay, now we know why he is the way he is, because of those cornflakes.
So I think one of the problems with skepticism is that I'm not fully, being like skepticism is my only thing. It seems like it's taking one of the ways of thinking. There's logic, there's emotion, there's also in rhetoric a notion of who you trust. And there's a lot of just going to the logic, you know, A, B, C, D, and not recognizing that depending on where you start, you could get different places, and neglecting the emotional aspect as if that's not valid, and neglecting that if people don't trust you, they won't even listen to you.
Yep.
So those go way back before modern marketing, but maybe how would you address those issues of trust in particular?
Well, I think you need to build trust, and one of the things we found with in some specific aspects of skepticism, so for example, I'll use climate change. If you find climate change tends to go along kind of tribal lines, more so than lines around truth or fact or where you get your facts from or that kind of stuff. So if you find someone in somebody's tribe that can relate something to them and get them to start thinking about it, that's a really good way of getting there, because they implicitly trust that person. And so, trust is not something that's easily imbued, so it helps to infer it, and infer it slowly in a lot of different ways. It's hard to change people's minds. You know, when we, I used to work in the advertising group at Intel, and we used to have something we call retina burn. So, the idea of retina burn is we would advertise so much that when people would close their eyes, they would see the Intel inside of them. And so sometimes it's repetition. And you know, the rule in advertising is also people don't even start to get it until they've seen it 3 times. So very often we have to keep repeating the message, being consistent, and over time people adopt these things. And that's true for marketing anything, not just skepticism.
Hi,
Peter.
So, assuming that I am not the only source for marketing tip number two.
You're one of the sources.
For sure. There was no question of that. Assuming I'm not the only one, let me clarify something. Marketing is not always mine, but sometimes it is.
We've made progress here today. Like I said in answer to the last question, it's little steps that get us toward a greater understanding.
So, we need to have a discussion about the different definitions of the word puffery.
They're in the same car on the way home. I'm going to look different than this, and then we're going to go.
It's going to be a long ride. Okay. Yeah.
So, Che, with your background and expertise in marketing, have you been able to come up with some possible soundbite-y rebranding kind of short words or phrases that we could use for skepticism in place of, that's not the conversation and not the long explanation and not a story, but just an Intel insight?
Well, so the answer is for some specific things, the answer is yes. So are you familiar with homeopathy, as an example? Is anyone here not familiar with homeopathy? We have a few. Okay, so homeopathy is an alternative medicine that involves diluting something to the point that there's no actual remedy in the remedy. They sell this in every pharmacy in the country. They sell it around the world. It's super popular. It's complete bunk. If you believe this, you believe anything. And they hide it by telling you it's natural remedies. It's all kinds of things. They put in very small text on there, it's homeopathy. So a few years ago, the British skeptics, the Manchester skeptics, did a campaign called the 1023 campaign. 1023 is a reference to Avogadro's number. So it's 6 by 10 to the 23, which is the number of moles in the
atoms per mole.
Atoms per mole, thank you. So homeopathy often exceeds that number, meaning that there's not an atom of active ingredient in the final. So, for that one, I wrote the press talking points. And so, for a specific issue, you can come up with very clear, pithy responses. It's harder to do for the movement as a whole, but honestly, I also don't think we've spent a lot of time trying to do that. And I think, Leonard walked out, it's going to be a long ride home. You know, CFI, I think, is a great organization to do that, right? It's a national, international organization, and our largest. And I think we need some of those big organizations to take that on and try and do that. So.
Well, Mark just said, what's more likely?
What's more likely, I think, is a good...
Okay. Oh. So we're going to end it with Jay, even though we could probably go on for another half an hour. Thank you so much, Jay.